back a little bit to Anchor Beis and Beis to Rabbi Yosha. Rabbi Yosha, which is at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down in the Gemara. There's a dot there. Yeah, Rabbi Yosha Amar. Okay. Rabbi Yosha Amar Liyetim Mitzrayim Nischal Koretz. Rabbi Yosha said there's a three with machlokas here, which we're beginning at the beginning of, as opposed to the middle of. Rabbi Yosha Amar Liyetim Mitzrayim Nischal Koretz. Eretz Yisrael was divided up to the people who entered the land of Israel. Okay, without reference to the people who left Egypt. As they entered, that's how they divided up. As many people as entered, over 20, they got portions. Okay? The Chassid says, Lishmos Matos Avosov. To those who left Egypt without any reference to those who entered the land. Scratch that. The opposite of what I just said before. In other words, even though the people left Egypt were no longer alive, nevertheless, Eretz Yisrael was divided up to them because it was the land promised unto them. Okay? See, Lishmos Matos Avosov. To the names of the tribes of their fathers. So why does it say Lo'ela Techolekarts, the ones who entered Eretz Yisrael? It's not true, right? It's going to tell us, just like Ela, the ones in front of us today, preclude women and children, so too the ones who left Mitzrayim means the ones who are over 20 and male at the time they left Mitzrayim. But the portions are divided up strictly according to the people who left Mitzrayim. Okay, that's opinion number one. Rabbi Yochanan, that's opinion number two. We're doing a fine, so it should be Rabbi Yenazon. That doesn't, not so germane what the name is for our purposes. It's the exact opposite, right? It goes according to those lands of the land of Israel. So why, Taka, does it make reference to those who left Egypt? So here already, Rabbi Yochanan makes kind of a compromise. He says, this is different than all other inheritances in the world. Any inheritance you have in the world, Chaim Yoshim Mason, those who are alive inherit those who are dead. Here, though those who are dead inherit to those who are alive. Now, what that means is, if you had from two families, a grand total of two families, one family had 10 children, and the other family had one child, and they were cousins. In other words, the fathers were brothers, and there are 11 children, 10 of one and one of the other. Okay? Is that clear? You have two brothers, Reuben and Shimon. Reuben had 10 sons, Shimon had one son. Okay. Now, theoretically, you divide up according to Reuben and Shimon left Egypt, their 11 children entered the land of Israel. If you went strictly according to Rabbi Yeshua, the first opinion, then Reuben would get one portion, Shimon would get one portion, right? That's it, two portions here, right? If you went strictly according to Boyoritz, you'd have 11 portions here, right? Right. So what is Rabbi Yochanan says is that you make kind of a compromise. You take you give 11 portions, but then you go back to the first to the Yotzei Mitzrayim, and you divide up those 11 portions equally among Reuven and Shimon, which means instead of 10 and 1, it's going to be 5.5 and 5.5, and then you give the 10 kids of Reuven the 5.5 portions, and the one kid of Shimon the 5.5 portions. You see how that works? Okay, again, one more time. Reuben and Shimon were the Yotzei Mitzrayim. Okay? Two brothers. They had between them 11 children. Reuben had 10 and Shimon had 1. Okay? All boys, of course. Now, if we went totally according to Yotzei Mitzrayim, there should be only two portions here. One, and Shimon would get the other. And Reuven's 10 kids would divide up the one portion, and Shimon's 10, the one kid, would get his one portion. That's when we went strictly according to Yotzei Mitzrayim. If we went strictly according to Nichnosim Loretz, those who entered the land of Israel, then actually Would there be 11 portions here? 10 portions for Reuven's 10 kids and one portion for Shimon's one kid, right? That would be if we went strictly according to Bai Ha'aretz. That would be 11. What did I say? Yes, 11. Yes. Okay, now, so what do we do? In fact, what we do is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we do neither of these things. We combine the two generations. We first look at how many people enter the land of Israel. Okay, and among Reuben and Shimon's two families, that's 11 people, right? So we give 11 portions. But we don't give them to those 11 children per one portion per person. Rather, we take those portions, and the dead people inherit the live people. Meaning that Reuben and Shimon, who are no longer alive, in some hypothetical way, inherit their children. Meaning that those 11 portions go back to the parents, to Reuben and Shimon. Now, if you take those 11 portions and give them back to the dead Reuben and Shimon, how much is each one of those guys going to get? Mix them, combine the two portions, and distribute them equally between the two brothers. Each one will get how much? 5.5. So therefore now, give it back to the Nichnasim L'Aretz. How much? The 10 kids of Reuven will divide up how many portions among themselves? 5.5. And the one kid of Shimon will get? 5.5. That's what Rabbi Yochanan holds. Okay? So it's not fair in any sense we would call fair. Okay? In the great American concept of fairness, something is lacking. Yeah, that sure is fair. So in any event, but that's how Rabbi Yochanan holds it. And that, in fact, is the sheet that Rashi brings down on Chumash. Tani. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon Korach has yet another shita. Okay, so far we had the Yetim, it's right. We had the Boya Oretz, but with a catch that you go back to the previous generation then and redistribute. Rabbi Shimon Korach has another pshat. He says, Yetim, it's right. Ulo aimdim barba smoam nischal koretz. Ketzad. How does this work? In other words, you both, the people who left Egypt and the people standing out of Moab in the plains of Moab, poised to enter the land of Israel, received. Now, let's ignore the Gemara's example for a minute. Let's go according to our example. In that case, in the case of Reuven and Shimon, Reuven had 10 kids and Shimon had one kid. So how many portions? If you gave a coin to both generations, then actually you would come out with 13 portions. Do you see that? 10. Right. That's how he holds. Give these two families together 13 portions. So actually, what would come out would be that instead of 5.5, each branch of family would get what? 6.5, right. So that's the image between him and Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? Now let's say you were lucky enough to be one of the people who left Egypt and be standing in Arvos Moav, either by some nation you didn't die, or as the Pnei Moshe brings down, you were over 60 when you left Egypt, which means now you were the ripe old age of 100 about to enter the land of Israel, because the Gzeir was not on those who were over 60 at the time of the Chet HaMeraglim, right? So actually we're 99 now. So in any event, because it was in the second year of the Chet HaMeraglim. So now you get two portions. One is a Yetzi Mitzrayim and one is a Nichnas L'Aretz. You personally. Okay? So Mishael Yetzi Mitzrayim Miyodi Marav Asmav Nodesh Nechalokim Miyotzi Mitzrayim V'lo Miyodi Marav Asmav. If you would be from those who left Egypt and not from Arvos Moav, Meomdi Arvos Moav, Lo Miyotz Mitzrayim, if you were from either one of those generations, not the Chelek Echad, you only get one portion. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I think my 6.5 shot is not correct. In other words, it wasn't redistributed, right? It was not like Rabbi Yochanan. No, it depends where. If you were lucky enough to be a person who left Egypt, then and was standing there, you got two. If you entered Eretz Yisrael now, you got one. If you left Egypt, right, then you got one. and that one would be distributed among your kids. So let's see how that would work. Okay, now that I've reneged on my pshat from before, let's take the case Reuven and Shimon and the 10 kids and the one kid. Okay, so Reuven and Shimon left Egypt. Each one, and they're dead. Each one of them gets one portion, right? Reuven's kids get 10 portions. Shimon's kid gets one portion. Now, actually, what's going to happen is that Reuven's kids, all 10 of his kids, are actually going to end up with 1.1 portions apiece. Do you see that? Because Reuven, there's no mixing and matching here. Reuven got a portion. His 10 kids each got a portion. So Reuven's one portion, assuming none of them was Bechor, let's say a girl was born first, right? So Reuven's 10 boys would divide up his one portion equally among them. His portion is the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So therefore, each of Reuven's kids would get their one portion as Nichnasim Laaretz, plus 10% of their father's portion. So they would each end up with 1.1 portions. Shimon's one kid would have his own one portion, plus Shimon's portion. So he, because Shimon left Egypt, and he, Shimon's kid, entered Eretz Yisrael. So he would end up with two portions. Did you follow that? What? Okay. So that's actually Rabbi Yishua ben Karcha's shita. Okay, now, but those slavchot, according to Rabbi Yishua ben Karcha, not l'chamish chalokin, they got five portions. How so? Chalkonim yetzim, it's right. First of all, their father left Egypt. It's slavchot, they left Egypt, that's one. They're chalkonim yetzim, it's right. Even though they're five girls, but five girls count as one boy, so therefore they have one portion as nichnasim l'aretz, right? As people, as if they were a boy entering Eretz Yisrael, that's two portions, right, so far? And also Sheya Bechor, Slavchot was firstborn. So therefore, not they got as since he was a firstborn, so therefore that was Shnei Chalokim. They actually got two portions. Now there's a little bit of a sleight of hand here. I'm not sure exactly how this worked, because Bechor, one of his portions should have been the initial portion he got as a Yotzei Mitzrayim. But I guess that what it means is that their grandfather also left Egypt. In other words, Slavchot wasn't the only one to leave Egypt, but their grandfather left Egypt too. So therefore, so, you know what, and that's really the next line in the Gemara. If you take a look at the next line, it says, V'chelek avien besoch achi avien, their father's portion among his brothers as well. So in other words, the assumption is that Slavchot's father left Egypt. Slavchot did as well. He didn't enter Eretz Yisrael. His kids entered Eretz Yisrael's five daughters. So altogether, five portions here. The five portions are one, the kids' portion themselves, because they entered Eretz Yisrael. Two, Slavchot's portions, because he left Mitzrayim. Three, the Slavchot's two portions in his grandfather's portion, because his grandfather also left Mitzrayim. I mean, sorry, Slavchot's father's portion, which is the Bno Slavchot's grandfather, because his father also left Egypt. So as a Bechor, he got double in that. That's another two portions. And besides that, somehow, I don't know exactly how this works, but somehow the grandfather's portion itself is considered to be yet another portion given to Bno Slavchot. Now, I don't know exactly how that works, because something seems to be redundant there. It seems to be a little bit funny. But the bottom line is that they got from several generations. Maybe the portions we're talking about are not equal portions. I'm not sure exactly how it works out to be totally five. Anyway, be that as it may, let's not get hung up on that. Somehow they got five portions again, because their grandfather left Egypt and their father left Egypt. Amar Rabbi Yossi Mas Nisalam, okay? Our mission doesn't say that. It says that you give the children, you give the Bnei Slavchot their portion among their father's brothers. Okay, so you really can't understand what the Gemara is talking about without looking at Pnei Moshe. The Pnei Moshe says is that he only had three portions. In other words, their portion, their father's portion, the father's portion, and his portion as a Bechor, and their portion in. I'm still saying I'll get three. Subject 3. Our Mishnah said, the Mishnah at the top of the page says, Chelak Avim Shiyotzer Mitzur. Oh, okay, yeah, so the Mishnah says it. But let's take a look back at the Mishnah at the top of the page. The father's portion left Egypt, and his portion with his brothers in Chefer. It was Slavchon ben Chefer. That's the grandfather's name, Chefer. Besides, it was a Bechor, he got two portions. So our Mishnah is actually very straightforward, because our Mishnah explains quite clearly how there are three portions, because Slavchon got one portion because he was Yotzei Mitzrayim. Chefer, who was Slavchot's father, was also Yetzim Mitzrayim, so he gets a portion, right? And besides, so in that, in Chefer's portion, Slavchot gets two portions. Why? Because Slavchot was a Bechor. Now here you see quite clearly, I know I'm confusing and I apologize for that, but here you see quite clearly that the portions we're discussing, when we say Slavchot got three, the Bnei Slavchot got three portions, they're not equal portions. Means there were three reasons why he was allotted land. He was allotted land, one, because he was, Tzlavchot himself left Egypt. Two, because he got double portion in Chefer. But Chefer's portion himself was divided up among Chefer's, all of Chefer's sons. And Chefer's portion was equivalent as a Yotzei Mitzrayim to Tzlavchot's portion. So therefore, when we say that Tzlavchot got three portions, we're not talking about three equally significant portions. He had his own portion, which was super significant, which was of regular significance, and then he had a double partial portion in Chefer, his father's portion, as the Bechor inheriting and getting a double portion over his brothers. Did anybody follow what I just said? Oh, okay, good. All right. So, it's hard to tell when you don't look at people's faces. So, in any event, So be that as it may, that's all assuming that that there was no, see, our Mishnah assumes that there was no portion distributed to the Bnei Slavchot as Nichnasim La'aretz. Everything goes back to Slavchot and Chefer because they left Mitzrayim. We do not give any credence to the parameter of entering, at the parameter of entering Eretz Yisrael. So our Mishnah seems not to indicate like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. However, immediately the Gemara ignores our Mishnah and continues along the vein of Rabbi Shimon Karcha, who takes both elements into account, as you shall see presently. But not yet. Without getting into the pasuk in Yehoshua, it works out that there were 10 portions, including to the three portions of Bnei Slavchot, six for the six tribes of the other tribes which entered Eretz Yisrael from Shevet Menashe, and which was Chatzi Shevet Menashe, of course, and then there was Bnei Slavchot, who were three, and there was one other portion from some other, from the grandfather of Chefer. Be that as it may, we're not going to get into it right now. Lamaisa, the Gemara says it works out with that, with the 10 works out with Bnei Slavchot getting 3. Now, again, as I said, we go back to Yehoshua ben Karcha's position, however, as you'll see presently. Yehoshua ben Kalev natu shlosh chalakim. Yehoshua ben Kalev got 3 portions. What were the 3? One second, the oven is open. Okay. Yehoshua ben Kalev got 3 portions. Chelko im Yotzei Mitzrayim. His port, each one got 3 portions. Chalka and Yetzim Mitzrayim, first of all, they left Egypt. Chalka and Yetzim Mitzrayim, Arva Smog. You see, we went back to Bishop and Korcha. They got an additional portion because they were standing Arva Smog. Dr. Chedek Meraglim, besides that, they got a special gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They got the portion of the other Meraglim. Although the Chassidus Abbot says, Yeshua Benun, Mekoli Bifinech, Chol Yumin HaNoshim. They were sustained from the people who, from those people. What does it mean? They were sustained from those people who visited the land of Israel. They got their portion. However, the portions which should have gone to those people who were consumed by plague when they complained in the desert, and that's called the portion which would have gone to Korach's group, Nafal Emtza, that was distributed, dispersed equally among the Shvatim. In other words, there was nobody else got that in lieu of Bnei Korach. Okay? Upnehem, hi, wait a minute, the sons of Korach we know survived, right? Upnehem is Chusavi Aviem Vimoseim. Their children, the Korach's kids, or whoever else's kids in that group survived, only got in the schus of their grandfathers, which I guess left Egypt as well. Their grandfathers on the father's side, the grandsons on the mother's side. The Sefer Torah says, "Bnei Korach Lameisu," they did not die, but their portions they only got based on their grandparents. Now, of course, if they we go like Shimon Korach, they also got in their own merit because they entered the land of Israel. But if you go on the assumption that only Yotzei Mitzrayim got, which was the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, then they only got in the merit of whatever grandparents they had who left Egypt. Okay. Rabbi Moshlo Moshlo Ma'adover Doima. Rabbi gave an analogy to what are this? Yes. That's a good point. I guess Lab Nekar themselves Lav Dafka. Either that or their portion in the Orei Halavim. But that's a good point. You're right. Maybe the other people like Bnei Korach who didn't die. That's like a good question. I didn't even think of that. Yishkoyah. What? Yeah. Takes a Levi to think of that question. Okay. Revi Moshe L'Moshe L'Ma'adover Doyme. Was this analogous to L'Shnei Achim Shutim, two brothers who are partners? She Yotzu B'Mitzrayim. Then they left Egypt. L'Zeh Tisha Bonin. Okay, this is very similar to the case I gave you before. You have two brothers who left Egypt. Lizeti Reuven and Shimon. Lizeti Shabani Mulizet Ben Echon. One of them has nine sons, and the other has one son, right? The Yorshu Beis, it should be Chamisha. Almost everybody changed it. Five Kurim. They inherited five Kur. Each one gets a lesach, which is a half a kur. Okay, there are 10 boys, so each one gets half a kur. But then we're going with Rabbi Yechonon Shita. You could give it back to the fathers, right? And they split it up. So nimtzo gzeh noita mechtzo, ben zeh noita mechtzo. The one son of Shimon gets half, gets five. Bnei zen, the nine sons of Reuven, they nogli mechtzo, they get half. In other words, instead of my 5.5, you have the same the year with five, the same idea. Rabbi Tzloy ben Yudai, Moshe, he gave a different analogy. Nachim Kohan Shutvim. There were two brothers, Kohanim, who were partners, again, Reuven and Shimon. Shoenim Lagorn, the dividing of Trumas and Maya Trumas in somebody's silo. Lazetisha Bani Mulazet Ben Echod. One had nine sons and one had one son. Vinoklu Besa Sora Kabin. And they took Trumos, which are 10 kav. I don't know why we'd have to give this marshal, but we do. Chazim Lava saying they give it to their fathers. The Chokum, they divided up. Even though one had nine sons and one had one son, Nimtzo Zem, Ben Zem, Noite Mechto, Bnei Zem, Mechto, the sons of each one get half. Okay, the same idea. Rabbi Yochanan Mason, the top of Chav Gimarav. Rabbi Yochanan asked a question. It says, Vaivasis, actually the Pasuk is not the Pasuk is cited by Gemara, but at the bottom of the Gemara you have the Shinui and the Schos. And there brings down the proper language of Pasuk. It says, Vaivasis, Chemel Oretz, Asher Nasasi Es Yodi. I bring them to the land which I lifted up my hand. And Nasati Oso Lechem, and I'll give it to you, a Morasha. The land of Israel is a Morasha, which literally means inheritance. We're going to dash it here. Begoyme. It's in the etc. Now the kasha is imatona. This actually ties into the rest, to other parts of the Yesh Noachim, which we're going to Mir Tzushem get to tonight. Imatona lam Yerusha. If it's a gift, why is it called an inheritance? The Yerusha lam matona. It says in the same pasuk, v'nasatin. The other one it says morosha. Is it a gift or is it an inheritance? Ela meachar shenat la nitlam l'shu matona. So says the Gemara. Once it's given to him as a gift. Then Chazav Nasal Mishon Yerusha was killed. Shem Yerusha Zod. Then it becomes an inheritance as well. In other words, it was not initially a birthright, the land of Israel, but it became a birthright. Now there's a whole passage in the Eskoriah, which is not here, which I'm just going to read to you, even though of course you don't have it in front of you. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Meryon, the Shem Rabbi Yochanan says, Kasuv it says, "V'tapchem Asher Amartem Lavaziyeh." After the Ma'aseh Meraglim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, your children who you said will be for naught, Uvnechem shalo yadu ayom tov aran, your children did not know good and evil. Heima yavou shama, they will go there to Eretz Yisrael. Vlohem et nenon to you, to them I shall give it. Vehem yirashua, and they will inherit it. And the same question there, it says, matana and yirusha. Im matana lo yirusha, udlam yirusha, vim yirusha lo matana. How can it be? Is it either, it's either matana or yirusha, not both. Elam yachar, shenit nolem belashem matana. No, so after it was initially given them as a gift, Chosem Nasalem Belosh and Yerusha was given them as Yerusha subsequently. Amrei B'Yoshio, going back to the Gemara which we have in front of us. Amrei B'Yoshio, B'Yoshio says in the fourth line down, Kamakom Shinemar Morosha, anytime it says the word Morosha, Lashon Dicha, it's a language of darkness, meaning it's not so simple. Morosha is not the same as Yerusha. Now don't ask me the dikduk, but Morosha is not the same as Yerusha, it's much more difficult and much less likely to actually occur. Hey, Sivun, so they ask the obvious question. V'aksiv morosha kilas Yaakov. What about Torah Tzivolonu Moshe morosha kilas Yaakov? Isn't that our birthright, our inheritance, right? The Torah says Gemara. Now, the line is a little bit better in the Scoria. So I'll read the way it says in the Scoria, but it's more or less the same thing. It says, V'is dio sakin mino. You think that there is there anything more dark, meaning more schwer, more difficult than Torah? Boyin du loy loy from Hashkechula. A person toils and toils and learns, and he still forgets everything that he learned. So therefore, you see that Torah is takemo rasha. People simply are incapable of grasping their Torah. Now, Lieberman brings down the famous message about Moshe Rabbeinu. Says by Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went up to Har Sinai for 40 days, he was loymed mishakech, loymed mishakech. He learned, forgot, until finally, at the end of the 40 days, the Torah was given to him as a gift. In other words, it's a siyata dishmaya, then really it's not necessarily in direct correlation to the amount of learning what you do, but rather to the amount of merit that you have, how much of your learning you'll actually remember. Okay? So that's why the language of Marasha is used by learning as well. Oh! Oh yeah, he says about Avas Hashem. That's an interesting idea. Where does he say that? Okay, if you ever find that, I'm very interested in seeing it. Okay, Shkoyach. Halacha Gimel. Echad Ben Vechad Abbas Menachla. A son and daughter, where there is a daughter where there is no son, of course, are equivalent in how they inherit. Ella, except Shaben, no Talpish, nine, but Nichse Ava, father, a son, when he inherits, gets double in his father's portion, father's property, of course, if he's the Bechor. Vein, no Talpish, nine, Nichseim, and not in his mother's property, even if he's the Bechor of his mother, there's no Bechor by mother's inheritance. And a son, a boy, never gets, a girl never gets double. Habonis, his own is Nichse Av, and also a girls who are sustained by the father's estate are sustained only from the father's estate and given preferential treatment. The boys have to go back. Vein is also Nichse Av, they're not given that preferential treatment when it comes to the mother's property. Okay? It says, by everything which is found unto by the father, the son, the bechor gets double. Ketzad, how so? Yorish b'roy k'v'muchsuk. The bechor gets double also in things which are not which the father doesn't even have, like outstanding loans which the father hasn't collected yet. Some of which the father would eventually have collected, which the son will now collect after his father's death. The bechor gets double in that as well. Now this is in direct contradiction to the Bavli. The Bavli says that a Bechor does not get double in Roy, only in Muchzuk. Not in things which are going to come in after the father's death, only what the father is holding on to at the time that the father dies. So since this is a direct contradiction to the Bavli, and even to the Yerushalmi, which we will Amir Tashem see tomorrow night, so then there's some people who change the Girsa here. They change Ketzer, Eina Bechor, Eina Yorish, Beroy, Kevin Muchzuk. But Lamaise, it's very difficult to do that without changing the Gemara dramatically. And both the Our text and the Skoria will read the same way. So it's more likely that this Yerushalmi is arguing the Bavli. Okay, and that's what it seems for us from the continuation. Kates and Mates Avi Bechai Avi Avi. A case is of Roy is if your father predeceased your grandfather, right? So the property which is going to come from the grandfather after the grandfather's own death is Roy. It's not. It's coming in. It's not yet held by the father at the time of his death. So whether you the Bechor will get double in that property is contingent on whether we say that Bechor gets double in Roy as in Busuk or not. Right? Same idea. So Ketz and Meis Avi Uchai Avi Avi Noitel Pishnai Minichsi Avi. He gets double from his father's property. Vei Noitel Pishnai Minichsi Avi Avi. He doesn't get double from his grandfather's property. Now that sounds pretty clearly like the ones who changed the Kirsa and have it that a Bechor does not get in Roy Kibum Buchsuk. But immediately the Gemara seems to change it to two, which is why it makes a problem. Vimil Avi Bechor, if however his father was a Bechor, so Kishem Shenotel Minichse Aviv, just like he takes from his father's property double, Kach Noito Benichse Avi Aviv, so too he gets from his grandfather's property double. So you see quite clearly here that Gemara says, yes, but there is Roy where he does get double. In other words, he does get the double in the grandfather's property before the father inherits that property if the father is not a Bechor. Right? Because that at that point there is no double for him to get, right? He's going, when he inherits, with his father predeceases his grandfather, he's actually going to inherit the grandfather directly, not through his father. So therefore, why should he get double? But what the Gemara does say, and in this case, Roy, the Bechor, he does get in Roy for the Muchsab, that if his father was a Bechor and was slated to get double in the grandfather's property, in that case, even though the father predeceased the grandfather, so that right of Bechor does pass down to the grandson. So even though he's inheriting the grandfather after his father's death, and directly, nevertheless, that right of Bechor, which was Roy, does pass down to him in that case. Okay? It's a very interesting concept. Again, if the father not predeceased the grandfather, even if the father was not a Bechor, so whatever the father got from the grandfather, the grandson will get double. But if the father predeceases the grandfather, and the father is not a Bechor, then in that case, the grandson, who then inherits directly from the grandfather, by the principle which the Bavli calls Mishmush, although I haven't seen it yet in the Yerushalmi, which means that you skip generations and go to the next guy down the line, so then the grandson doesn't get double in the grandfather's property. That Roy he doesn't get. But the Roy he does get is that if his father was a Bechor, and that was something which would have been integral to the line of succession, then that right remains with the grid with the son even after his father predeceased his grandfather, which is an interesting finish which Yerushalmi has. Okay? Reish Lakish B'Shem Rabbi, which the Bavli would not hold of, if I understand correctly. Reish Lakish B'Shem Abba Bar Daloyan says, Nemar Mishpat Lina Kfela, it says it's a judgment in terms of the double of B'Chor, but Nemar Mishpat Lina Pshut then says it's a judgment in terms of the single portion of a non-B'Chor. Malinim pshuta in terms of a simple, straightforward portion, not a bchor. At roisa ben kilukayim lito pshito zaviv. You see the son as if he's alive in order to take the one portion of his father, meaning that you see the father of this survivor alive, even though he predeceased the grandfather, to take the grandfather's portion, his portion in the grandfather's property, and then to transmit it down to his son. Avliyin Kfela, also in terms of double, at Rosa Ben Kilukayim, you see the son alive, Lito Kfela Saviv, in other words, you see it going through the father, even if the father predeceased the grandfather, and therefore he takes double in the grandfather's property, even if his father is not a Bechor. Now, this is a very, very complicated issue, and it's really beyond the scope of our discussions to get into it. But it seems that Reish Lakish does not hold of Mishmush. Meaning the Reish Lakish holds that property doesn't skip generations. Even if the father predeceases the grandfather, it can't skip the father. It's got to go through the father. So therefore, since that is the case, even if the father predeceased the grandfather, whatever parameters would apply to the inheritance had it gone in the normal fashion from grandfather to father to grandson, apply even if it goes directly from grandfather to grandson. And the machlokes between him and the previous Amora is therefore, does this grandson, who is the bechor of his father, get double in what came down directly from his grandfather to him? If you hold the mishmush, skipping, going over the dead father from grandfather to grandson, then he wouldn't get double because he's not his grandfather's bechor. But if you hold that it must go through the dead father, then even though the father is dead, nevertheless, since in anything from his father, this grandson gets double, so too now when what he gets from the grandfather, it also gets double as well. Which is a very interesting machlokas, but let's not get into it now. Are you still with me over there? Okay. Halacha d'alt. Ha'omer, somebody says, Ish ploni b'ni b'chor, my son who is a b'chor. Lo yito b'shnayim, should not take toward a double portion. Ish ploni b'ni, my son, who is my son. Lo yashimachim, should not inherit with his brethren. Lo maklum, it's not a valid condition. Shehisna p'masha kosa b'atayra, he made a condition against that which the Torah says to us, right, which is that there's a constant double portion by Bechor and a single portion by the other son. Nevertheless, Hamachalik Nechosav Apiv, somebody before he dies, as he is dying, with the concept of Matna Shchiv Meiro, distributes his property not according to the allocation which the Torah has given, rather according to as he sees fits. Ribal Echonomiyat Lacher, and he gives one of his sons too much and one of his sons too little. Hishvul Amos Abchor, he gives Abchor the equivalent portion to the other brothers. Devarav, turn the page, Devarav, Kayomi, we sustain his words, why? Because then he's not doing it as Yerusha. It's only Master Shkos, but if you try to change what the Torah gives us parameters of Yerusha, but that's not what he's doing. What he's doing, rather, is, in fact, giving gifts before his death. Gifts before his death, he can do whatever he wants. So that's why a will, a Jewish law, has to be constructed not as what happens post-mortem, but happens pre-mortem. Do you see that? In order to avoid the issue of Master Mashkos HaBatera. Is that clear? Yeah, okay. That may be true as well, but that doesn't come up in Bava Basra. So, we said because of, if he tried to change the manner of inheritance, as we said at the beginning of Mishnah, it's invalid. He wrote a document attesting to his redistribution of his wealth among his children, and he wrote the language of gift. Anywhere in the document, the Gemara is going to give examples. So, Mishum Atani wrote the concept of gifting. Dvarav Kayamim sustains the entire thing, and we look at it as a matan as opposed to trying to change Yerushalayim. Rabbi Lo, Hishvas HaBukhar Lachim. Rabbi Lo had a case in which either he himself or a paskin that one could make the b'chor equal to the other brothers. Armelon Rechai Rabbi Chagai, so Rabbi Chagai said to either to him or to people in the Beis Medrash, v'lo kaira hi v'lo yuchal v'akir, isn't it going against the Torah itself, which says that you can't change the b'chor and give it to somebody else? Says more. Rabbi Lezer says, ha'vodosh yachol. He took a note that it's possible to do it. Elishen Roshai, it's not proper to do it. Now, Lamaisa, what it means is that you're not supposed to do it. The Gemara in Bavli says that even if you have a Ben Rasha, you shouldn't, and a Ben Tzadik, you shouldn't give the money for the Rasha to the Tzadik. Why is that? Because maybe your son is a Rasha, well, someday have a Tzadik for a grandson. So therefore, you shouldn't tamper with the line of inheritance, regardless. Well, nevertheless, it says you're not supposed to, but you can. Now, Ramaisa, how can you do it? You can, Yachid, if you can't do it, it's only Mishay Matan, as we said in our Mishnah. It's Tafka, it has to be with a gift, and not through trying to manipulate the Ruyusha of the Torah itself. Okay, getting back to the next portion of Mishnah, because Ben Mechil, Ben Memtah, Ben Sof, Mishu Matana. If you wrote this language of Matana in the beginning, or the middle, or the end, Vora Kayami, this sustains the entire transaction. Amar Rabbi Yoshi, Rabbi Yoshi says, Yinos, what's an example of this? Yinos, Elish, Ploni, Yerusha. Shirashti or Rashid. give it to so-and-so as an inheritance, which I've given to him. That's where he wrote Lashon Matan at the beginning of the document. Yirash ish ploni matan shorashtiv. That's where he wrote Yerush in the beginning. Then he wrote Matan in the middle, shorashtiv at the end. So that's Lashon Matan in the middle of the document. Yirash ploni Yerush shenasati lo. That's language of Matan at the end of the document. So even though you put in languages of Yerusha, which seem to detract, nevertheless, since you have language of Matana, that makes the entire transaction work as a Mamash Chibra, as opposed to changing the Yerusha. Okay? Now, if a person said, a Shchimira said, Kisvu Tnu Soda Ploni Ploni, write and give over a certain field to so-and-so, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, Yaakum, Alun Uvda, Kumi, Rabbi Yochan, they asked Rabbi Yochan the Shiloh, Amalos, he said, depends. If the document was only written as a commemoration of the deed, meaning like a proof that it took place, then you can write it and give it. However, if he meant that the document should complete the transaction, well, the document is only written after the death of the Shchimra. Everybody concedes she'ein adam mezake b'chzav l'achem yisa, documents after death are no good. So therefore, it depends on the nature of the document. The document was the tool or only proof. Tool is bad. Proof is okay. Says more further, Shmuel shal Rav Chuna. Shmuel asked Rav Chuna, matana shekasa b'v'loshon mecher. What if the Shchimra wrote that was a sale and it was a gift? So Amalei said, it's great. Now, Amalei is not like the Pnei Moshe, not the Shai Teretz Yisrael, rather like the Lieberman, who says that Rav Chuna, which is actually like the Bavli, and Rav Chuna initially said, it's a good thing. Akabe Atrei Rach She Barki, you put him on the Barak means, of course, lightning, right? What did he say? So lightning goes very fast. So this is two fast horses. Because as a gift, it works as a matnas chimera. But a gift has no guarantee. But a sale is guaranteed. So he gave him both milas, the mila of a gift, which works even as a matnas chimera, right? And it doesn't require full documentation and all those advantages, which we'll see later on in the Sechta. And on the other end, it has the milus of a sale, and the sale is guaranteed. So he said, it's great. It's double barrel shotgun. I'm Rabbi Chizkiz, and lo amaran ela maisu train chivrin chsusin chivrin. There's now just to bring in two white horses, umarkivin al treyon, and putting something on both of them, v'dein azo b'dov. And each one goes in different directions. In other words, each one's pulling in different directions. Mushtakach lo tzai klum, it comes out, you didn't grab. Tzai is hunt, but here means didn't grab anything. In other words, mecher matona clash, and they cancel each other out. So therefore, it's not a valid gift and not a valid sale. It's nothing. So it's a machlokas whether the double language helps or actually harms. And I believe in the Bavli it says it helps. I don't have a Gemara of Balabasa with me. But I believe in the Bavli it says it helps. Not here it says the conclusion is that it harms. Okay. Hoy Marish Plani Yurashani Bamakum Shiesh Bas. If a person says, let so and so, who's a stranger, inherit me, if a place where he has a daughter, or BT Dirashani, my daughter's inherit me, Bamakum Shiesh Ba Ben, if he has a son. Well, Omar Klum, that also doesn't work. She no mash kosbatar, even though these are candidates potentially, if the first line candidate is not there, but since there is a first line candidate there, this is Masa Mashkos Batera. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Mer Ima Amara Misha Roy Liyarsha. Very interesting halacha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, which actually contradicts the previous Mishnah. So he says, if one said about somebody who is suitable to inherit him, and he tampered with Yusha to the extent that he changed the proportions, as opposed to changing, giving it from the person who is Yoresh to the person who is not Yoresh, giving it from one Yoresh to a different Yoresh, in a proportion other than the initial, than the automatic allocation would have indicated, Dvarav Kami, that does work. If he said it about somebody who's not suitable to inherit it, ain't Dvarav Kami, then it does not work. Okay? Says Moral Tav Chav Dalad Amraf. Om Rabbi Yochanan says, Lom Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broke Ela Ben Habonim Vabas Ben Habonos. Now, what does Yor Liyosha mean? If you have several sons, you give to one son among your sons. There again, you change the proportion the Torah would have given by default. But Bas Ben Abonas, a daughter among other daughters. But Bas Ben Achim, if you give it to a daughter instead of to your boys, or Ach Ben Abonas, you give it to one of your brothers instead of to your girls, your own brothers instead of to your girls. In other words, you go down a stature in Yerusha, you give to a girl where they're boys, you give to your brothers where you have children. Lo, that doesn't work. Even Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka concedes you can't tamper to that extent. Rabbi Yochanan said, I look Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, I look as Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Now, Rabbi Shaul Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi asked Rabbi Nosson a question. What are you asking? So it should be the Gilin Ephraim says, Rabbi Bar Bachia Omar, Achin Shelo. This is what he asked him. My tongue, Rabbi Yochanan Broka. What is the last Rabbi Yochanan Broka that one can't tamper by changing proportions? Rabbi Zira, Amar Achin Shelo. This is what Rabbi asked Rabbi Nosson. My role, Lomer, look Rabbi Yochanan Broka. Why do we pass him look Rabbi Yochanan Broka? So Amalei, Rabbi Nosson said back to Rabbi, I don't stand. Bat Lo Shanisalon, okay? Didn't you teach us this in Mesech Tuxulas? Inun Yartun? Now, this is a very interesting tush, though. I think the Babi makes as well, but I don't remember. It's a very interesting connection. In Masech HaTzuvos, we learned that a husband can say to his wife, if you predecease me and you don't get your ksuva, so the ksuva will go instead to your male children. That's called, anybody remember what that's called? It's a tafi. A certain type of ksuva. Ksuvas? Very good. Bonim Dikri. That's what it was. So Rebbe said, so Rabbi Nelson said to Rebbe, listen, you taught us Gatzer Ksuvas Bonim Dikri. Isn't that saying you're Yochanan ben Broka? In other words, you're tampering with the Yerusha. You're giving what was the mother's Ksuva, instead of allocating it equally among your heirs, you're giving it to her children specifically, and not to any other wife's children. That's tampering, so you see that yourself came up with this idea. So as Zemara, the Rebbe responded, he said, no, kinimas nisin. You missed the point. That's the way to learn that Mishnah, or that halacha in Ksuvas, is inu niyaflun. It's not a redistribution of Yerusha. It's a special takanas chachamim to give it to those children. Not that they should inherit it. It's a matana to those children. That was Chayal Chachamim instituted to the halacha, which is opening to Rabbana. Aksuvas Banim Dichri. Amar Lo, so Rabbi Nosson said, I'm sorry, Rabbi said again, further to Rabbi Nosson, or there's a Gergis in the Skoriel, the Rabbi Lo said. In other words, either statement of Rabbi is a Tana expounding more, or Rabbi Law explaining further. So Afilu Kamad Namar Yarsun. Even though the Ksuvas Banim Dikri is a form of Yerusha, ultimately it's a Rabbanim. And Koch Basin Yupe. And Basin Hefker works even by Yerusha, which is a tremendous concept. In other words, it means that even though you can't be Masta Mashakosa Batero by Yerusha, you can have Basin has the right to tamper with it. So that means if the Sanhedrin nowadays, let's say, would decide that daughters, if we had a Sanhedrin would decide daughters should inherit, right? They have the right to do that. The Koch of Hefker, Beis, and Hefker is such that even if Masa Mashkosa Batoya doesn't work, Hefker, Beis, and Hefker does work. It's an amazing concept, right? That's what he says. Koch, Beis, and Yufa. Kamada Tamar Tamon, just like you said over there, Adam Mizaka B'loshim Matana. V'acha mizake, right? Now this is a case where a person cannot. The name Moshe Zoya brings down the case. A guy says that I forgot actually what this case is. A person can't give a gift b'loshim matana. What's the case we're talking about here? He says, Tain Mana Laploini. Tain Mana Laploini says, it's not good enough, he has to be Mizake, that thing. It's not just enough to say Tain Mana Laploini. But it does work by Shri Mira, right? Even though normally Tain Mana Laploini is not a language of Kinyan. Here, by Shri Mira, it is sufficient in order to make a Kinyan, because we say Divri Shri Mira Kiksum Misturin Dami. It's as if he gave it. here too, Hacham is zakeh, kavasah, so to ein adam is zakeh b'lashon Yerusha, a person normally cannot give over the language of Yerusha, unless that person is a true heir, v'hacham is zakeh by b'ksuvus b'ayim dirchen, Chazal allowed that to work, which is because of Kolech of Efker Beis Nefker. Now Tamatina, here we come to a very interesting sugya. We're not going to finish it tonight, but Tamatina, we went over there. Rishon Amleimer, just go till about 10:30, then we'll stop. Tamatina, we went over there. Rishon Amleimer, imeso yurashena. Fascinating halacha. If a husband promised his wife he won't inherit her, rather after his death that her property will go to her children or to her parents or to her brothers, he promised her that. Says Amara, tough. If he dies, he inherits her. Shehista mashe kosa b'atayra, because it's a master mashe kosa b'atayra. You can't reject Yerusha. You can't deny your position as an heir. You can give away your inheritance, but you can't repudiate your position as an heir. You are an heir, master mashe kosa b'atayra, to try to repudiate that position. Okay? Rabbi Yirmishim Rav Seb, Ibnei She. Hisna ala kosu batera, vamasa masha kosu batera tnoya batel? Is that what you want to say? That, like we do, like Rishon Lezion, since we're saying that's masa masha kosu batera and it's canceled? I don't understand. But tnai she'en al shomama. That's true, famous caveat. That's true by condition which is not a monetary condition. The kob tnai mama nanu kayyamin. Right here, not to reject your Yerusha, that's a monetary tonight. And monetary tonight, we know you can't be master mashkubasukasubatera. You can't be master mashkubasubatera when it's something which doesn't concern money. When it concerns money, you can, since contractual law trumps the parameters of the Torah, so how can it can't be master mashkubasubatera in this case over here? Now bear in mind, it's a very important point to make, which is Rav would not have asked this question by a regular Yerusha, because a regular Yerusha is not the same as Yerusha Sabal. I mentioned the point before again, the Rishami doesn't use it, so it's a little bit difficult for me to say this, but I'll say it anyway. A regular Yerushas work with Mishmush. That means they're automatic. There's no transaction involved. They go automatically from father to son. In fact, the way the Chinuch puts it, the son already has a right to his father's property in his father's lifetime. That right is not strong enough to prevent his father from selling it off, but it's a certain tenuous connection, right? That doesn't exist by your wife. By wife, there's no such thing. So therefore, if there is a constant Yerusha Zabal, it's a different type of Yerusha. And we'll see more about that tomorrow night. So therefore, Lamaisa, the Gemara is asking, why can't you repudiate the Yerusha which comes from your wife, right? So says the Gemara, my time of the Rav, what's the basis of Rav's question? Basoif hu zacha. Right, the question is that it's based on the assumption that at the end, the question, so why, according to Rav, can't you remove yourself? Right? Why can't you remove yourself? Lamaisa, even though it's a Tanai Shibimama, what is Rav? I said the question is Rav's question. It's the Gemara's question on Rav. Rav's one says Masa Mashkos Kotor. So the Gemara asks the question, how goes Masa Mashkos Kotor? It's a Masa Mashkos Kotor, it's over Shibimama. So the Gemara answers, my time of the Rav, but Soifu Zacha. Now the way the Pnei Moshe determines it is a little bit difficult, because the Pnei Moshe seems to hold that it's a Takana Durabanan. And it's clear that Rav holds that it's a Yusha Doraisa. So rather, what Rav holds is that even Yerusha Sabal is the same thing like Yerusha of a regular heir. Just like a regular heir cannot remove himself because the Torah automatically, and it's not even automatically, the Torah made the property his without his consent or rejection of any sort. It just automatically transfers. So too, by a Baal, automatically transfers. So therefore, it looks like a davishah moment, it's not really a davishah moment. It's a mystical transfer of ownership, and therefore you can't reject it. Okay? We're going to get into this again, as I said, a little bit more tomorrow night. Rabbi Yochanan said, that you can adjust the portions in your inheritance. That should be umar, a separate statement. Rabbi Yochanan said, if a wife sold or gave away land which was hers during her lifetime. But in Leo's kind, theoretically, that should be a valid transaction. Why? Because Lamaisa, even though her husband's going to inherit it, just like any inherits a property which you are, you know, the person who's going to leave you bequest, possessed is during his lifetime, he can sell it off. So to a wife can sell it off. So why can a wife not sell off land without her permission? Without permission of their husband. Why they say your sale is invalid? In other words, that a person should not, a woman should not try and hide property from her husband by giving it to somebody else who's going to say, I said shalom, but shalian, that some that they the other guy would say it's his. In other words, we know that wives sometimes will try and protect their assets by giving them to other men who will then claim that the assets then belong to them, and if the wife is divorced, they'll give it back to the wife. So in order to prevent that happening, they said you should know that if this wife predeceases her husband, her husband will come and remove the property from you and take it over. So even though this is not according to the strict letter of Yerusha, this should not apply. It's not a corollary of laws of Yerusha. Laws of Yerusha do not prevent the Morish from selling property during his lifetime. By women, they said it does because they didn't want the women trying to hide her assets from her husband. Okay, and this was defense mechanism to make sure that that people wouldn't buy from the woman because they would know that after her death, if she predeceased her husband, it would go to her husband nonetheless. Okay, turn the page. Rabbi Yusnei Havalei Uvda Kumi Rabbanon. Rabbi Yusnei had a case in front of the rabbis, the Chivune, and he said, now this is a case where a man repudiated the right of inheritance in his wife's property. And he said, it's legitimate. Rabbi Yusnei said, you can repudiate your right of inheritance in your wife's properties. So therefore, after his wife died, he did not allow the husband to go and take possession of the property. So the husband went and appealed to Reish Lakish. So he said, Zil chus v'nichsach. He said, you have the right to go down to the property because your mechila meant nothing. Like we said, no, but out. You can't be moichel this Yerusha away. It's yours no matter what. Rav says the husband gets it after his wife's death, even if he repudiated. Now I'm not sure how it follows from that he passed in that you can't remove yourself from inheritance. I don't know exactly. Maybe because he holds that it has to be a Yorish ben Hayorshim, that you give it to somebody else who's also a Yorish, but to repeat a Yerusha altogether you can't do. Somehow that tells us that Rabbi Yochanan also holds Yerusha Baal is so supreme that even if he tries to repudiate it, he can't repudiate it, he gets it nonetheless. And Reish Lakish, of course, the one just passed it. Ezel chus l'nichsach, go down to your property, because your repudiation of the inheritance of your property was a meaningless gesture. So mat in a rabbanon, who the rabbanon who hold that you can repudiate your wife's your wife, the Yerusha you're going to get for your wife. So the Gemara, in a case of clear Talmudic humor, says, what do you mean, which rabbis? Rabbanon, the Rabbi Yustane. He's the guy who paskin that top. Of course, he's the one who holds differently. Now, Lamaisa, what does Rabbi Yustane hold? It's likely that Rabbi Yusnei holds that Yerusha Zabal is only the Rabbanon. This is actually a big issue in the Yesh Nochlin and the Bavli, and it's only alluded to here in the Yerushalmi, at least as far as I can tell. But there is an opinion which holds that Yerusha Zabal is the Rabbanon. So if Yerusha Zabal is the Rabbanon, so therefore you of course can reject it. Right? If it's the Raisa, it's hard to say that. But if it's the Rabbanon, it's pretty easy to say you can't reject it. And there are those who hold that Yerusha Zabal is the Rabbanon. In fact, it seems like the Rambam paskens that way based on various different Gemaras. Okay. Lamaisa, I told you about 10:30. We did about two blocks. This is a nice, fine place as any to stop. All right? Tomorrow night we'll try the same thing, Mirza Shem. Okay? That's true. That's an interesting point. You know, maybe that's what Rabbi Yosef would hold. It's like a Migo. Migo that he could divorce her and he can also repudiate his inheritance. That's a nice pshat. Then he wouldn't have to say based on the Rosh Hashanah the Rabbanah. Yishkech. Okay, guys. Have a good night. Speak to you tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem. Bye-bye.